Welcome back to the Radio Realm with Brian Hubley at the helm. Heard every Friday night on ksunradio.com, Sonoma State University's college radio station. And I have yet another producer from my favorite show, The Opie and Anthony Show, which is heard every day on Sirius XM, XM Channel 105, and Sirius Channel 206. This time around, it's Travis Teft. That's at Travis Teft on Twitter. How are you doing, Travis?
Good, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. So, I guess, first of all, I just want to get to know, like, what exactly was your origin story with the Opie and Anthony Show?
It was pretty much like everyone else's, you know. I interned for them a couple months after they started back on XM, and I was just in the right place at the right time when it came to filling out their staff, you know?
Yeah, was there any like anything particular like that you attribute to like kind of making it to the next level from intern onto the staff?
No, not really. I just kind of, you know, did my job every day, did it well enough for them to want to keep me around, and did it better than the other interns that were in my class. And, you know, they needed a staff, and it was time to hire some people, and Danny and Nathaniel and myself were ready and willing. So, you know, I just treated an internship like a job opportunity and went with it, you know.
Right on. So it's basically just like your work ethic. And I'm friends with you on Facebook, and I noticed tons of great like profile pictures with tons of great great stars that like, you know, come down onto the show, like Mike Tyson and so on. So which guest had you like just geeked out the most?
Geeked out the most. You know, really early on, it was probably Kevin Smith, because I grew up in Jersey, and you know, it's like a requisite to just love Kevin Smith if you're from Jersey. But probably over the years, God, that's hard to say, but Kevin Smith comes to mind immediately because he was one of those guys that when I first started, you know, he's always been on the show, you know, he's been a friend of the show. And I just thought that was really cool. I'll say Kevin Smith outside of all, like, you know, the comedians and stuff.
Yeah. Tons of your guys is like, you know, regular comedians has to be like the best of any show out there. You know, Louis C.K., Robert Kelly, Joe DeRosa, so on and so on. Billy Burr was just in there this week. Mm-hmm. But I also want to bring up, like, lots of times, like, for instance, on Wednesday, Damian Eccles from the West Memphis 3 was in the studio. So it's not always, like, so-called, like, you know, like, fun and jokes. Sometimes you guys do get, like, serious. Is that something that is, like, was that something that really stuck out and was important?
I think any good show, you know, has to toe that line between, you know, comedy and the ability to be serious when you want to. I mean, you know, we do that with political discussions and then, you know, the next segment we can be talking about, you know, something that's completely different. But I love it. I mean, Damian Eccles coming in this week was a dream come true for me because I've been following that case for forever, you know. So that to me is cooler than some comedian that we may have never had in before, you know?
Yeah, and just that story is so awesome because it just goes to show that sometimes the media, like, does have, like, you know, power for good, because the guy was basically, like, sitting in prison, rotting away for 18 years, and nobody really gave a shit until, like, the documentary was out, and I believe Henry Rollins was out there, like, championing it. So it just goes to show, like, you know, people who study the media, stories like this, because so many times it's just, like, you know, the media gets such a bad rap.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. If, you know, the media wasn't around, then Damian would probably be, you know, dead and the other two would be rotting in jail. But sometimes, you know, when something just hits, you know, and if the media doesn't let it go, you know, eventually something's got to happen. So yeah, that was definitely a case where the media definitely helped them more than it hurt them in the end, you know?
Yeah, and the show is called The Opie and Anthony Show, but it's also hosted by the famous comedian, Jim Norton. And what I really appreciate about Jim Norton is he has great interviewing skills. It seems like he's so, like, well-read and researched when, like, a guest that's in that he really cares about. Is that something that he's, like, grown over the years doing, or something that you've noticed, like, right out of the gate?
No, I've definitely noticed Jim growing in his interview skills and technique. I mean, he will read every book that we give to him. He will watch every movie that we give to him. He will come in today for Damian Eccles, he had 2 pages of questions for Damian Eccles. So Jim, I've only known him for 8 years, but, you know, his skills as an interviewer in those 8 years have just, you know, exploded. Like, he's a fantastic interviewer.
Yeah, and there's so many guys there in that building at SiriusXM, you know, Howard Stern, Ron Bennington, just, like, so many great interviewers, and Jimmy's interviews really do stand out, and he has a show on the Boneyard as well. People should definitely go check out Jim Norton's radio show.
Yeah, he's a great interviewer, and he's definitely, you know, getting up to that level where you want to hear a Jim Norton interview.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I also wanted to ask you, like, as a producer of, you know, ONA, and you're also an employee of SiriusXM, is it kind of like your job to be the go-between, like, when stuff, like, you know, gets hairy, like when Opie was tweeting out, like, the bed bugs pick and all that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, there's some parts of my job where I'm the go-between between management and Opie and Anthony, and then, you know, there's other parts where I just let management handle that themselves. You know, if there's an issue that they have with something, so sometimes it has nothing to do with me.
Yeah. Is there anything what would you say the biggest fire you might've had to put out would be?
Oh, geez. What's the biggest fire I've had to put out? You know, I've got to be honest. Like, I've been in a certain position of power for 2 years there ever since Steve left, and I don't think we've had that many major fires to put out. Even when they leaked the Anthony Weiner photo, that was less of a fire than I thought it was going to be. You know, that was more of a in the end it was good exposure for the show. I don't think we've had any major fires, which fingers crossed, you know, in the coming weeks with the contracts coming up, we don't have any more.
Yeah, I'm definitely keeping my fingers crossed, hoping you guys return to, you know.
Yeah, me too.
XM.
I have a job to worry about.
So anything you could like share with me about that? Like, what is the mood, if you know, like with the host and just everybody around? Would you say it's more likely than not they're coming back?
I really couldn't tell you. I hope they do. I mean, they have 7 more live shows until their contracts are up. I would like to think that things are looking good. I haven't seen anybody on either side, you know, running down the hall screaming. I'm very hopeful that next month I'll be doing the same thing that I'm doing right now.
Yeah, I am as well, for, you know, not only, you know, for you, but for Danny and E-Rock and all the cool guys that, you know, are on the staff.
Mm-hmm.
So let me
we all gotta put food on the table, you know?
Yeah. So let me just switch gears from ONA to the Oakland A's and the Baltimore Orioles, because I know you're a big Baltimore Orioles fan. I'm an Oakland A's fan, and we're basically locked up right now, got pretty much the same record, and we got that wild card spot. So just tell me what it's like. I know it's amazing just watching baseball in September and having a vested interest. What's it like for you?
It's something that I'm really experiencing for the first time. I've been a lifelong Orioles fan. And I can remember, you know, the last time that they were good. It's not that long ago. It was 14 years ago, but I was only 16. So like, even though I remember it, I didn't appreciate it. You know, I'm really experiencing like a winning season as an adult for the first time. So I'm having, you know, an absolute blast, especially considering that they were supposed to finish dead last. Like, there was no plan for this to happen at all. So I'm enjoying it. Probably just as much as you, because you guys weren't supposed to be in this boat either.
Yeah, exactly. Has it taken away from, like, you know, the usual hype that the NFL has at this time? I know it has for me.
Absolutely, yeah. The NFL started, you know, what, two and a half weeks ago, and normally I couldn't be more excited, and right now I couldn't care less about what's going on in the NFL, because I've still got baseball to watch for the first time.
Right. And so I take it, do you like the fact that they have this new wild card, like one game showdown, instead of like so many teams fighting for the one spot?
I think in a way it's definitely good for the game, because there's so many more teams that are still, you know, technically in it. I'm not a complete fan of it, especially considering, you know, what if like, let's say the Oakland A's, they have the number one wild card spot right now. What if they end up being 10 games better than whoever finishes in the second wild card, and then they've just got a bad night and they end up losing that play-in game?
Right.
There's certain parts of that don't feel fair to me, but there's other parts where, you know, I kind of see where Bud Selig is going as far as, you know, getting more fans to be more interested in the games later on. But I really hope that the Orioles just win the division, because I don't want to go back to Oakland and play a one-game wild-card playoff.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Texas Rangers. We're 3 games back of them, and I really just want to be into a series because, yeah, like you're saying, I don't want that one-game opportunity. Because they're going to be, no matter who you're going against, it's going to be an ace. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be... it's going to be their best pitcher. And that's another thing that I'm not sure, you know, I'm a fan of, is you're going to put it all on the line for this one game, and then you've still got to worry about the divisional series. So you don't want to throw, maybe you don't want to throw your ace out there in the one game playoff, because maybe you want him to pitch in game one or two of the divisional series. So it's going to be interesting to see how managers, you know, deal with this in the coming years.
Yeah, and you're mentioning managers, and we should probably bring up Bob Melvin, manager of the Oakland A's, and Buck Showalter, manager of the Baltimore Orioles, are just in such a neck and neck race right now for, like, you know, manager of the year. Like, I think both managers have claim to it. Your guy over there basically trained my guy. So in a way, it's kind of like he's picked up tools from you. So he could get a little shout out. Do you think it just has to do with who's going to finish with the better record?
Who do I think is going to finish with the better record?
Yeah, or if with the managers, like, are they going to give it to whoever will, you know, make it farther?
Oh, well, I think they vote for manager of the year before the postseason. So going to guess, I've got to go with Buck, just because the Orioles are really taking over that story of the year situation from the A's. I think for a while, everybody just figured the Orioles were going to fall apart eventually, myself included. And nobody was really saying, okay, well, the A's are going to fall apart. Like, the A's are just a very well-built team. Like, there's no explanation for why the Orioles are doing good. So I think Buck's going to win it. I think Robin Ventura is going to get a lot of votes for Chicago, but I think Buck's going to win it in the end.
Yeah, it's definitely an AL. Lots of American League teams are just great this year. Like, even the crummy teams, like, you know, Seattle, like, they're not so bad. So, like,
yeah, they're not terrible. They're not. They're less than 10 games under 500. You know.
Right. And also just want to bring up Chris Davis, who's on the Baltimore Orioles in batting practice. He broke a window in Mount Davis, and that's that, like, you know, those big suites they have for the Raiders games up there. And that's just an amazing feat that I don't think anyone's really done that before. So
yeah, he did that. Did he do that during batting practice, or was that during an actual game?
I think it was batting practice, but
yeah, I read about that.
So is there,
I think, only a couple people have done that.
Yeah, is there any other guys, like, on the Orioles that I should just, you know, keep my eye out on?
Jeez, I couldn't even tell you. You know, like a month ago, I wouldn't have said Nate McLaus, but the guy's hitting, you know, it seems that he's hitting every ball that he gets in the leadoff position now. I think everybody's just, you know, doing their job. But I'm a big Adam Jones fan. I'm a big Matt Wieters fan. I was a Markakis fan before he went down for the season. They've got a good core of guys over there.
Yeah, without a doubt. And as an Orioles fan, I just wanted to ask you, did you have the Billy Ripken 89 Fleer card?
I never got that card, no. And that was, like, when I was collecting baseball cards, that was before, you know, the internet, so I couldn't just go on eBay and buy it. Like, I had the regular card, and I always wanted that, you know, you could almost call it a variant because it was so... it was so rare to get. I think I saw it at a couple, like, comic book baseball card shows over the years that I went to with my dad, but no, I never got that card.
Yeah, my buddy has. If anyone's not knowing, it's the one, it's 89 card, and Billy Ripken, he's holding the bat on his shoulder, and at the very base of the bat, he wrote "fuckface" on it. And my buddy,
it's
has
a circle for a long time. That was the card to get. Like, oh, did you see Billy Ripken card?
Yeah. And so I know that you've collected cards, you just mentioned, and right now you collect art prints. We're both, you know, friends in the same community, so to speak. So do you think, like, between the artist prints coming out and the numerous galleries springing up everywhere, do you think the market is becoming oversaturated like the baseball card market did?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's something that usually happens with any collector's market, you know, like it will always get oversaturated. Like in the 90s, you know, like you said, with baseball cards, they just started, dozens of companies popped up. They started putting out, you know, five different sets a year. And after a while, you know, the public says, well, we can't collect all of these cards. It's too much. And I think that's kind of what's happening with the art print movie poster world right now. It really exploded last year. It really exploded this year. And now, yes, you've got dozens of galleries putting out dozens of prints a week, and you're turning something that used to be very collectible into something that's not so collectible anymore. And I think you run the risk of losing a lot of fans by doing that, because people like collectible stuff. Like, I'm not going to Walmart and buying the posters that they're selling there because I can get those anywhere. Right. You know, like, I'm buying stuff because it's collectible. And when you don't feel like something's collectible anymore, a lot of people tend to just go find something else, you know?
Yeah. So what was your very, like, first print? Like, what was it that, like, got you, like, you know,
involved? My first print was, I did not care about this world at all, but I'm a big Disney fan. And Mondo announced their Disney collection was starting. The first print was Steamboat Willie by Tom Whalen, and I went online and I bought it, and I guess I got really lucky, you know, because I didn't realize how hard it was to get one of these posters from Mondo on their website, but I did it and everything was fine.
Wow.
And yeah, and I didn't realize at the time like how difficult that was, because you know, I've tried to get Mondo posters since then, and sometimes I'm lucky and sometimes I'm not. So yeah, Disney got me into it, and then it just, you know, spawned like a wildfire from there. Then it's just like I have to have everything, you know.
Yeah, and there's lots of stuff like coming out into the mainstream. Like for instance, the new video game, Sleeping Dog. The cover's done by Tyler Stout, and this new Blu-ray, this new Blu-ray that's upcoming, the Quentin Tarantino set by Ken Taylor looks awesome. So like, what's your like, you know, thoughts on just like kind of other things like these artists kind of like, you know, breaking new grounds or whatever?
Like going into stuff that's not posters.
Yeah, like, you know,
I think it's great. I mean, they've got to make their money, and if they can do a good job, then they should be doing that. Like, you mentioned Ken Taylor's Tarantino cover art. I think it looks amazing. Like, it's for a box set that everybody's going to want. And if you look at the picture, I guess that box set's been released already overseas, and it's just a picture of them. And it doesn't look as good as some custom artwork does. And hopefully, you know, hopefully there's more of that. I know Tyler Stout did Assault on Precinct 13, and that was for the DVD in some other country. I think it's great that they're branching out doing video. I know Ollie Moss does video game covers, lots of DVD covers. So I think it's definitely a good thing.
Yeah, and you just got your hands on a couple books. You were at the SPX, the Small Press Expo, and you got to meet Ollie Moss and Scott Campbell. So how cool are these books? Because I think that's a great idea, too, for these artists just, you know, start publishing some stuff, because that's, you know, nice. You can flip through your books, buy a couple extra, frame some up your favorites.
Absolutely. Like, when these artists do these do these shows at these galleries, the Ollie Moss book that's coming out is Silhouettes of Pop Culture, and it's all of his silhouette paper cuts that he did for this gallery show last year. And Scott C, the same thing. Scott C's book is called The Great Showdowns, and it's all of his Great Showdowns artwork that he's done for galleries in the last 2 years. And these are great books for anyone that doesn't live in Los Angeles, because you didn't get to go to those shows. So you've seen these things online, but you've never gotten to actually, you know, see them up close. So to have them all in a book is really awesome. And there's guys like Mike Mitchell who does these prints called Just Like Us. He can eventually have a book. Tyler Stout, if he wanted to, he could compile all of his, you know, Mondo prints if he's got those licenses and come out with a book. And I think it's a great way for people who don't have all that money to go buy all of that art to experience it in one, you know, setting like a book.
Yeah, because, you know, so many times it's so hard to really appreciate the greatness of a lot of these images until you actually, like, see them, you know, like, not on a digital computer screen or whatever. So
yeah, anybody can look at something on the computer and say, oh, that's really cool, you know, but it's completely different to see it, you know, up close and personal.
So who do you think is the most, like, overrated artist right now, if there's one out there?
Who do you think is the most overrated artist? Well, I think that's all of a matter of taste, but I would probably say Tyler Stout is my least favorite artist, just because I don't feel like I get anything different with him. I know what I'm getting. He has a very distinct style. I'm very tired of that style. There's guys like Ollie Moss and Martin Anson and Ken Taylor who always surprise me, and I don't know what I'm getting. And with him, while I think his style works, it's not for me.
Yeah, because Danny actually introduced me to all this art stuff back when I interviewed him last year. You know, introduced me to Tim Doyle, the print that he did for the Secret Show of the Future. And then I started researching all these different guys, and that was the first thing I noticed about Tyler Stout, was that everything just looks the same, you know? And I think Danny said that it's just kind of like a visual checklist.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's different. different strokes for different folks. I guess I know there's some people who absolutely love them, and that's okay. So I'm sure there's a lot of stuff that I like that people really don't like either, you know?
Right. So if there's one film out there that doesn't, you think, is represented with a great print, what would it be? I know I have my answer. I'll see if you have the same one before I tell you.
If there's one film out there that's represented by a great print, you know, I'm just done, you know, not trashing Tyler Stout, but saying he's not my favorite, but I really love his Kill Bill print. I think that's a fantastic movie poster. And if it wasn't, you know, $400, I would buy one. Immediately off the top of my head, I absolutely love his Kill Bill poster.
Yeah, I agree 100% to Kill Bill. And his RoboCop really sticks out too, but everything else...
Yeah, you know, like, so that's the thing. Like, his style really works sometimes, but it doesn't always work. You know, there are movies like RoboCop and like Kill Bill that are absolutely perfect for him.
Yeah. And do you have any... Is there any good Shawshank Redemption prints out there? I've been looking around.
No.
There's
no.
Zero?
Not.
Someone needs to...
I hope there is one, you know?
Definitely, Travis. Well, thank you so much for, you know, spending some time with me. Everybody, go follow Travis Teft on Twitter. That's at Travis Teft, TEFFT, and listen to him on Opie and Anthony every day. Is there an alarm or something that, you know, or do you have a pager that goes off if they bring up grunge music or anything? Because it seems like you're just, boom, right there, like you just appeared.
No, I just run down the hallway real quick and start to have some fun.
Right on, man. Well, thanks again, Travis. Everyone, listen to Opie and Anthony Monday through Fridays on SiriusXM. And do you know if that interview with Damian Eccles, is that going to be on Best of the Week this weekend or anything?
Absolutely. There's no way it's not going to be on the Worst of the Week.
So everyone tune in for that. And also check out the book. It's called Life After Death. And it's just amazing, right?
Yeah, it's a great book. Everyone should read it.
All right, Travis. Have a good week, buddy.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you so much. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye.